Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Joey Schultz and I am joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts. First up, he's the guy who totally wants a bunch of cards banned. It's Matt Morgan.
Joey, a couple of my friends got married this past weekend and the ceremony was so touching, even the cake was in tears. There's a lot of well levels played, to that Matt. Joke, so if you don't get it right away.
The double dad joke?
I stacked it up pretty well, yeah.
The triple jack. Okay, we need to move on. Anyway, up next, he totally wants a whole bunch of cards to form a band. That's Dana Roach.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's that? I was just reading a bunch of Twitter conversation about Jeweled Lotus. But I can start whenever I'm ready. Let's just start this over. I'll be good to go.
Dana, are you eating popcorn? Is that what you're
It's doing? Very. It's all very entertaining.
It has been a bit of a spectacle. Anyway, this is the EDH Retcast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new commander decks. And here on the podcast, what we like to do is give all that data just a little bit more context. Hey, Matt, what is it that we are talking about this week?
Well, we're not going to talk about Jeweled Lotus because it wasn't banned, but we're going to talk about cards that were banned in other formats and how they translate into Commander.
That we are kind of inspired by all of the hubbub that happened, all of the internet conversation that Dana is watching. He just got a bowl of popcorn to watch people talk about it because it was quite a... And also, like, all of the talk about... All of the discourse about Jeweled Lotus will be, like, well past, I think, by the time that this episode airs. Like, it's a week and a half out from when we're actually
It'll be two
it,
days but. After all that discussion in internet time. That's, like, 3 years
sure.
in real life.
Yeah, but it is also... It kind of got us thinking about cards that were banned, but not in EDH. Cards that were banned in other formats and what their popularity looks like in EDH. So that's what we'll be talking about here in this episode, is seeing where those other cards from other formats have landed in our favorite format. But before we get to that main topic, which should be a whole lot of fun, we do want to give a huge, huge, huge thank you to the folks at the Command Zone. That's Josh LeQuay and the entire team at Command Zone. They do all of the post-production work on our podcast and make it look as nifty and spiffy as it does. It's awesome. So thank you guys so much. And of course, thank you to our sponsors for the cast as well.
Our awesome sponsors. So if you want to get anything from Commander Legends, the set is coming out soon and very soon, you can head over to cardkingdom.com/EDHREC, or you can click on any of these price links for cardkingdom.com or tcgplayer.com. Both of them are great sponsors. They help bring the show to all of you out in listener land. But you can support the show by shopping and buying any of these awesome Commander Legends cards. You can just click the price link on any card that you're looking to purchase. That'll take you right to your vendor of choice, and you can purchase the cards that you're going to purchase anyways, but you support the show in the process, and we definitely appreciate all of that. So thank you so much to our amazing sponsors, Card Kingdom and TCG Player.
Mm-hmm.
And another way you can support the show is by going to patreon.com/EDHRecCast. We have multiple different tiers you can join at. You can get a shout out on the show, like we're going to get right now for Patreon supporter Charlie Deeks. So we do one of those every single week, but you can join our Discord and talk to us. You can contribute dad jokes. You can contribute cards for challenge the stats. You can get merch. There's a whole bunch of different tiers. So if you want to support us, that's another way you can do it. And if you want to see us play with some of the cool cards we got on Card Kingdom or got from TCG Player, you can go to twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. You can find us every Wednesday night there at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, with a wonderful guest each and every week playing our decks online for your enjoyment.
Yeah, indeed. And Charlie, thank you so much. Shout out to you. Thanks for being a awesome supporter. All right, fellas, let's get into our main topic now. We're talking about cards that are banned in other formats. So we're looking at the current banned list for Standard, for Historic, for Modern, for things even like Vintage. And we're going to look and see where those cards that were banned in those other formats fell in EDH and whether the power that they represent in those other formats also applies to our format. And Matt, we may need a little bit of help from you since you are, of the three of us, the person who actually plays other constructed formats, whereas Dana and I, we just kind of don't even understand why people play formats other than Commander.
Well, I'm more than happy to lend my expertise with my whole pro point more than happy to. But yes, I was the person who kind of brought the I play 60 card formats to the podcast, so I'm more than happy to bring some of that perspective over. And one thing to keep in mind too, as we go throughout all these lists, we're not going to talk about the entire ban list for every format, right? Because some of those cards, they just don't translate well and people don't play them in Commander. So we're really going to talk about the ones that do get, you know, any sort of, you know, mentionable play in Commander.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to go, you know, combing through every single card on those ban lists, because based on the past couple of years of Standard, who knows, that could be a whole lot of cards that we would have to look through. So we just want to talk about the most popular ones. And actually, let's get to it. Let's start off with Standard. Matt, I'm going to throw this back to you. What are some of the cards that we're seeing that are banned in Standard, and where do they sort of fall within EDH?
Well, the first two cards that I think we should talk about are two that were kind of the biggest problems while they were in Standard. And that's going to be Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, and Omnath, Locus of Creation. So blue and green going together just seems to be kind of a problem, as we'll talk about in a lot of these cards. But both of these were just incredible threats in Standard. They both drew you a card. They both got you ahead on resources on several different fronts. And they're just, it's just very, very powerful to be doing when you only have one opponent that you have to worry about. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, drew you a card, put a land into play, and also gained you some life, and then you can just cast it over and over again from your graveyard. So it's really hard to get rid of. And then Omnath, Locus of Creation, enters the battlefield, you draw a card, and whenever you play lands, you just get more and more effects and more bonuses that just stack up so quickly, and it's just so hard to overcome. But when we look at those cards in Commander, they don't really translate that great when it comes to numbers, but I think there's a few factors in there. So Omnath, Locus of Creation is currently played in 1,058 decks, and that's just as a commander. That's not even counting the amount of decks that it goes into in the 99. And then you also have Uro, which is in 603 decks, but I think a big reason for that was Standard players just gobbled this card up, and it was so expensive, so nobody could really play it all that much in Commander.
That absolutely tracks. And what's so important about these in particular is that they fall into this, you know, landfall strategy. And like, the way to punish a landfall strategy, especially in a one-on-one format, is to pressure their life total while they're taking a whole bunch of time getting a bunch of resources. Mm-hmm. So for these to give you back the life that you need to actually make it to that endgame where you can abuse as many lands as you've got, like, man, why do these let you draw cards? Man, why do these let you gain life? Like, these things, they did some work in their constructed formats.
It was very, very hard to play red on Arena when both of these cards were legal.
Right. The important difference, though, I think that's why they were strong for sure. The difference in why they're strong there versus why they're not as strong in Commander and see less play is because they were really the only thing that did that in Standard.
Right.
Like, if you want to ramp and get that card in the same package, Uro does that, and if your opponent wants to do a similar thing, their choice is playing Uro. Mm-hmm. If you want to do that in EDH, you have a whole ton of other options. So you're looking at a card in Standard that did a really, really singular thing that was difficult for your opponent to do without playing the same card. That's not true in Commander.
Yeah, absolutely agree that Commander is all about resource accumulation to begin with, and that's what these cards do very, very well. So when you're doing that in a 60-card format where it's about resource management and trying to navigate those types of scenarios, when it starts turning that into, you know, accumulating so many different resources, that's when it gets out of hand in 60-card formats where we're already doing that on so many different ways, like you just said, Dana. I love that point.
Yeah. Well, you know, those were not the only cards that are currently banned in Standard. There's a couple of other ones, including the very famous, the thief, the Elk Maker himself. Another card that we are seeing banned in Standard right now is Oko, Thief of Crowns, the Simic Planeswalker who can turn things into elks and then also, I think, can make food and then also, I think, can switch control of things. But the main point is that it permanently turns things into elks, and that's just absolutely bonkers insane for those form. He goes up in loyalty to defend himself, and it's absolutely crazy. Curiously, Oko's popularity in EDH is only about like 6% of the eligible decks that can play him. Shows up in, you know, 6,700 or so. I feel like that's low for a Planeswalker that experienced that much impact in literally every other format. Like, we're just talking about cards that are banned in Standard right now, but Oko's banned in a lot of other places too. Like,
Oko's an absolute bomb in other formats where your opponent has a finite amount of ways to deal with Oko, and the threat it takes out is always going to be the biggest threat to you on the board. So you're removing your opponent's best piece, and they have limited ways to then deal with your Oko. In Commander, there's three people there, so there's a lot more threats, first of all, for you to deal with, and removing one threat actually might be something the other two players want you to do.
Right.
You're helping them in some situations. Additionally, there's a lot more ways to deal with Planeswalkers in Commander, just in terms of the sheer amount of spells we've had over the years, but you also have twice as many players, therefore twice as many creatures that have a chance, well, not even twice, three times as many technically, that can then swing at that Oko and take out if it becomes a problem. So Planeswalkers just in general are way weaker in Commander than they are in 1v1 formats.
Yeah, well, and in Commander, paying three mana and whatever the price tag is on Oko, I believe it's $20 or so right now, for what essentially becomes a repeatable Beast Within, you turn some best creature that they have into a 3-3 that doesn't really carry over great. Like, it's still fine. It's still a powerful effect. Beast Within and Generous Gift, those types of cards are very, very good. But putting this on a stick, like, it, the price tag really isn't worth it unless you're in some of the most high-powered, you know, play groups that you have.
Yeah, I would dare say it's not a good card in Commander for the most part.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. I feel like it actually still has plenty of play because the repeatable, you know, the permanence of this, like, it's a nuisance, and that, I think, gives it some power in my eyes, but it's certainly nowhere near the power level factor that it had in all of the one-on-one formats. Like, that is definitely an unequal proposition there. Like, it's nowhere near that level, but it is still, I feel like it's not a bad one for us to be having.
Perhaps bad isn't the right word. Perhaps it's not good enough to crack most 100s.
Gotcha. Yeah. I do have a Simic Super Friends deck that I worked on for a little bit, and I am purposefully not including Oko for a lot of the reasons that you guys have mentioned. So, you know, well spotted there. Moving on to some other cards banned in Standard, I want to talk briefly about the card Fires of Invention, because I think that that's kind of an interesting one with where it falls in EDH in particular. That's the red enchantment that lets you cast spells only on your turn, and I think it restricts you to only two spells per turn, but you can cast your spells for free if its mana cost is equal to or less than the number of lands that you have. This thing was pretty insane in the in Standard format because it could basically help you fix your colors and cast a bunch of free stuff, and then you could leave up your mana to do anything else that you wanted with it, like using activated abilities of lands or creatures and things like that, which is pretty nutso. But here in Commander, it only shows up in like 1600 decks. That's a pretty big disparity.
Yeah, I mean, Fires of Invention is just blatantly cheating in 60 card formats. Like, being able to double your mana every turn, it's The play patterns that it encouraged are kind of like a card that we'll talk about here in a minute, but just the fact that you're able to double up on spells the turn that you play it and double your mana, that's pretty insane in a 1v1 format. In multiplayer, it's easier to take care of, even though it's an enchantment, but even then, it's all about casting, you know, all these massive spells, so only being able to get 2 5 mana spells the next turn, that's not near as big of a deal in Commander.
Right. It actually is a significant restriction in this format because we're already pretty good on the color fixing, most likely, and we're probably casting all of those crazy spells possibly for free to begin with. So that benefit isn't quite nearly worth the restriction.
Well, or at least if not free, you have access to literally every mana rock ever printed, and most decks are running, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 of them. So you have the equivalent of that amount of mana oftentimes by the time you play Fires Invention without the restrictions.
Right. Yeah, it's like, oh, I want to cast 2 spells basically like almost for free, whatever. I'll play Rishkar's Expertise. Like, I get more than 1 spell's worth out of that card right there. So, yeah.
Or you'll just have 12 mana available from your mana rocks, and you can just cast the spells and have extra mana left and not be restricted. And yeah, so.
Right, there you go. All right, Dana, take us through. There are 2 more cards that are also banned in Standard that we kind of want to address here too.
We have 2 oddball ones. We have Escape from the Wilds and Once Upon a Time, which are basically cards that let you dig down into your library to find a specific piece for your deck. Both made your deck in Standard way more consistent and made finding your lines way more consistent and finding your correct pieces of land way more consistent than they wanted you to be able to do. Mm-hmm. In Commander, number one, you already have a ton of ways to do that, so these really didn't stand out in our format. And being able to find, in a 60-card deck, find one of four copies of a specific card you want is much easier than it is to find one copy of a card in a 100-card deck. Mm-hmm. So the impact is that not only are they competing for slots with, you know, every card ever printed, but their impact and what they're going to do isn't the same thing just based on the size of the decks and the fact that we're a singleton format.
Yeah, Escape to the Wilds pretty much turns into a draw five in standard. But like you said, we have Rishkar's expertise. We have so many just incredibly powerful draw engines, especially in green these days, that Escape to the Wilds just doesn't really stack up. It's still a fine card. I wouldn't be surprised if I saw it. But at the same time, like, it was bannably good because if you're just casting, five more spells than this turn and the next in standard, that's pretty crazy in some of the decks that were built to abuse it.
Yeah, very much. All right. So that was a brief walk through standard, but let's move on now. Let's talk about the historic format. Matt, what are some of the cards that we're seeing in historic that got banned historically, but here in EDH, we're kind of like, I don't know, give or take. What's going on there?
So control is a very popular archetype in 60 card formats that is a little bit harder to pull off. And there are two cards that are banned in historic that control players absolutely love. Nexus of Fate and Teferi Time Raveler. Nexus of Fate is that just the, if you've watched, I believe it's Ali Entrazi's stream, you'll know his disdain for Nexus of Fate, having it looped against him infinitely and just dragging a game out. It's just, you take an extra turn, you shuffle it back into your library, and that's whenever it goes anywhere. It's just such a hard card to get rid of. It kind of has that Eldrazi Titan type of clause where when it goes to the graveyard, just shuffle back in, doesn't really matter. And then Teferi Time Raveler just makes it very, very hard for you to interact with anybody really at any given time and make sure that your opponents can only cast spells whenever they could cast a sorcery. Then you can tick up and you can cast pretty much any sorcery spell whenever you want to. So it's such a hard spell to navigate in 60 card formats, but they don't really translate that well into Commander. Only 9% of decks that are playing blue and white are playing Teferi Time Raveler, about 9,000 decks total. And the Nexus of Fate, about 9,000 decks as well, but only 4% of blue decks. It hasn't really been adopted all that well. And I think it's just because there are better extra turn spells.
Nexus of Fate, I can totally agree with you. I feel like Teferi's numbers are actually still pretty respectable there at the 9% eligibility, but his effect is also not wholly unique in the Commander format either. We've got effects like Grand Abolisher, for example, mm-hmm. that also says people can't do stuff on your turn. Teferi's a little bit more far-reaching than that, but he's also got other versions, like his very first iteration, the creature version from Time Spiral, also restricts enemies from casting stuff at instant speed. And then there's also, I believe, the green creature Dosin the Fallen Leaf, which also prevents people from doing stuff. If not that, there's like a ton of other different types of cards that can also produce the same effect. So it is less unique in Commander than it is in a whole bunch of other formats where it just turns off your opponent's ability to have interaction, which can be really, really mean. But we've got so many other different types of abilities for that here in Commander, I suppose.
Teferi is a perfect example of a card where the multiplayer aspect of Commander makes the concept of threat exist in a way it doesn't in other formats.
Yeah.
Another format in 1v1, when someone drops a Teferi, they are always at all times probably going to want to remove that. It's a powerful, strong card, and that person's just always trying to kill you anyway. In Commander, that isn't the case. You are not always the target. You are not always the threat. You are not always the person people are trying to remove. But when you play a Teferi and you suddenly start messing with everyone's spells, that simultaneously turns all heads towards you.
Right.
And that's not a thing that exists elsewhere. So that's probably in part keeping this card in check, because it's one of those spells that when you play it and it hits the board, everyone starts gunning for you.
Yeah. In Commander, it seems like one of those cards that you use specifically because you know you're about to combo off that turn and you don't want anyone else to mess with you. And that also kind of reminds me of another card that we're seeing that was banned in Historic, Veil of Summer. This is the one mana green instant that draws a card if an opponent has cast a blue or black spell on their turn and also can give your stuff hexproof from those colors. This has been called a one mana green cryptic command because it draws you a card and basically blanks an opponent's spell. This thing was absolutely insane. In EDH, its applicability is a little bit different because it mostly seems to be showing up in competitive lists. The most popular commanders that we're seeing with it definitely tend to be competitive commanders such as Selvala, Heart of the Wilds, or, you know, partner pairings with Thrasios, the Gitrog monster, that sort of thing. Even if you're not playing it competitively though, like, this is still an impressive card and you're probably going to see a blue or a black player somewhere at any random pod just to randomly draw a card from this thing. So it's a really, really impressive card that is shocking to see at an uncommon in constructed formats, is I guess what I'll say.
And if it tells you anything too about its power level, this is an uncommon, like you said, Joey. It's a $9 uncommon. If you go to cardkingdom.com/EDHREC, you can spend $9 on Veil of Summer.
Oh, no. Okay, Matt, tell us about other cards that were banned in Historic. That was delightful.
Well, so an entire deck kind of got banned out of Historic. It was the Winota Joiner of Forces deck, and this was kind of a combo deck, kind of an aggro deck, kind of a just mess with everybody deck. So Winota is that Boros legendary creature. Whenever a non-human creature attacks, you can look at the top five cards of your library, and you can put a human creature onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. It was very, very easy to abuse this. But what also got banned out of that deck was what you would cheat into play with Winota, and that is Agent of Treachery, which is 5 blue-blue, so a 7-mana card was banned because of a Boros card, so riddle me that. But whenever Agent of Treachery enters the battlefield, you gain control of target permanent, and then at the beginning of your end step, if you control 3 or more permanents you don't own, you draw 3 cards. So it was very, very easy in Historic to just cheat out 3 Agents of Treachery with Winota. And it was very hard to interact with any of these things because, you know, it was just happening so fast. So both of those cards were banned. Agent of Treachery is actually played in 9,000 decks. So 4%, you know, we're seeing about the same numbers as we are with Nexus of Fate. And then Winota has 779 decks to her name. So it's kind of cool to see Winota getting a decent amount of Boros love in the Commander format.
Yeah, I still have yet to personally see Winota do the thing the way that I know a lot of other folks have had good experience with Winota. I still have yet to see it. Agent of Treachery, I gotta say though, I'm surprised that the numbers are low on that one. That seems, it's obnoxious. That it is so mean. And if you blink it, and if you multiply the ETB effects of that one, it draws you cards for stealing stuff. Like, that card seems like it deserves, I'm not going to challenge this, but I feel like this one's powerful enough to justify seeing more than its current popularity.
You know, I think this is a situation where it's just enough competition.
Sure.
Although, you know, the price on things like Gilded Drake have gone through the roof, so I guess maybe that is no longer a competition because that's just unaffordable. But there's, you know, every steal effect ever is available in Commander, and maybe you don't want to be paying one that costs this much mana when you have options elsewhere that are cheaper.
Gotcha, yeah.
But Dana, you don't have to pay the mana cost. You can just put it in a Jeskai deck with Winota, cheat it out, and you're playing Historic. There we go.
There it is. All right. There's two more cards that I think are of really interesting note that were banned in Historic. Those are the cards Wilderness Reclamation, which is the enchantment that untaps your lands on your end step. And there's also Field of the Dead, the magnificent land that makes zombies when you get a whole bunch of lands. I love Field of the Dead so stinking much. That thing shows up in 17,000 decks, nearly 18,000 decks. This land is beautiful. I love this land so much. It hurts, but not me. It doesn't hurt me that I love it so much. It hurts my co-hosts because I use it against them, and it's really, really wonderful. Play it in landfall decks. It's great.
Do you use it on twitch.tv/EDHRecCast when you use it against us?
Indeed, I do. Okay. Wilderness Reclamation is kind of an interesting one to see. I'm actually a little surprised to see that it is also showing up in over 16,000 decks here, because it kind of just strikes me as like a not as great Seedborn Muse kind of effect. I think what might be going on there, though, is this, that like Seedborn Muse is such a pricey card nowadays that this is a really great budget alternative to it. So it's another way to help supplement that particular type of strategy. It can be very controlling in EDH as well.
And the effects do stack. So if you want one badly enough,
true,
you maybe do want two.
Yeah.
And especially decks that have a commander that has some kind of an activated ability that you can like just spam the mana into. People tend to just want to dump as much as they can into that. Things like Kenrith, the Returned King, for example.
Yeah, very true. All right, very good point. All right, sweet. So we've talked about Historic, but now, Matt, take us to Pioneer.
So heading into Pioneer, we actually have kind of the backbones for a lot of the high-level, high-functioning commander mana bases. Fetchlands, as far as the Onslaught Fetchlands, as some people might know them. That's the Bloodstained Mire, the Flooded Strand, the, you know, pay one life, tap them, sacrifice them. You can search up a mountain slash swamp, if you will, for Bloodstained Mire, or a plains slash island for Flooded Strand. that entire cycle is banned. They were banned out of Pioneer because it just took so long. It gave people really good access to all their colors, kind of the reason that we like them so much in Commander. But they're, you know, Polluted Delta, for example, is played in 14% of Commander decks. It's played in 0% of Pioneer decks because the whole thing's banned.
Well, but you hit the nail on the head, Matt, that the fixing, if you have access to both Shocklands and Fetchlands and four copies of each, in a 60-card deck, you can just run a three-color deck, oftentimes a four-color deck, just thoughtlessly. Yep. Like, you have the mana to do that, and you can splash just for one single card, and they just didn't want you doing that in this format.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And these are, of course, a huge staple of especially landfall decks here in Commander. So of all of the cards that we will be talking about that have, you know, experienced popularity in EDH, these are, of course, like near the top of the ticket. Not quite number one. We'll get to that later. But they are a huge staple of the format. And I do wish that they were just a little bit cheaper, but that is just me. What else are we seeing in Pioneer there, Matt?
Well, weirdly enough, we have one card that it sees a decent amount of play. Smuggler's Copter, the old looter scooter. It's two mana for a flying artifact vehicle. Whenever it attacks or blocks, you can draw a card, then you can discard a card, and has a crew of one cost, and it's a 3/3. It's just a very, very good card filtering effect. I play that actually in my Valduk deck just because it's a way to tap my creatures. But it doesn't really translate near as well in Pioneer. In Pioneer, it just gives you so much carded velocity and just getting through your deck. It's really hard to keep up with. Whereas in Commander, I'm not sure if it really is that important to just draw one and just loot one every turn.
Yeah, you've got to be really dedicated. I think like King Makar, for example, who wants ways to get tapped, or Kalamax might use vehicles as well to try and find a way to get tapped for free without having to attack. So vehicles can be useful there. But yeah, it only shows up in like 1% of eligible decks, Smuggler's Copter does in EDH. So not as huge here, because the three mana flying in the air to loot, like, it's so crazy that we can look at a 2-mana 3/3 with flying that lets us draw and discard a card. And in this format, we're like, you know. Like,
I think amazing. You put it very, very well, Joey. It's fine, but there are definitely more exciting things you can be doing.
Yeah. And then also sort of wrapping up Pioneer, the last couple of cards we want to talk about here. Dana, take us through them, because we're looking at a whole bunch of cards that seem at first, I didn't quite know why Matt wanted to group these all together, but it's because they do some combo things apparently. So Dana, what else is banned in Pioneer, and what kind of combos are they up to?
So we're looking at Underworld Breach, which is a way to get a card advantage in red. You're looking at Walking Ballista, which is a very famous combo piece. Felidar Guardian and Kethis, the Hidden Hand, which does see a lot of play in Commander. So you're looking at four individual pieces that are used in combo decks, although I don't know that much about the specific combos. Perhaps Matt can fill us in. I know Ballista combos with almost everything. I think there's, last I checked, it was like 14,000 different cards it comboed with. But Matt might be able to expand on this a little bit here.
Well, the Walking Ballista, the combo spell book that we talked about, it literally exploded. The whole website crashed when they saw Walking Ballista. So yes, you are correct. But there are so many things Walking Ballista combos with. The big one that pushed it over the edge was the new Heliod that came out in Theros Beyond Death. So Heliod, you can just give Walking Ballista lifelink. So whenever you remove one of those counters, then you just have Walking Ballista deal a damage. And then since you gained life, you put a counter on it again, and you take that counter back off, and you deal a damage, then you gain, and you just repeat that all over the time. But then also you have stuff like Underworld Breach, which comboed out with stuff like Lotus Field, so you generated a ton of mana, you cast all sorts of spells with just a random common out of Gatecrash that it just went nuts with. It was insane to watch, but also Felidar Guardian. It was a standard combo deck with Saheeli Rai. Well, it just happened to turn up in Pioneer as well. And then Kethis the Hidden Hand was a very, very specific combo deck with Mox Amber and casting all sorts of things like that. But also, it was just very redundant. It was a very hard deck to play, too. All of those combos, it was just so hard for people to interact with combos in Pioneer at the time. WotC rightfully stepped up and just said, you know what? We're just going to try to push combo decks aside a little bit.
Well, and I think you said the key word is interacting. You know, combo is a thing that exists in every format. In our format, we have force of will to deal with combos. And we have, you know, every counter spell ever printed and in every amazing removal spell at instant speed ever printed. You're running Syncopate and then, you know, things like that in Pioneer. Your right. options to respond to combo are much more limited than they are in particularly the older Eternal formats and things like Commander, where you have all the pieces and you just didn't in Pioneer, and still to a degree don't.
Well, and another thing too, that you said it earlier, Dana, about some other decks, having three opponents versus just one, it takes all the pressure off just one person required yep. to have the answer, or they just lose. There's right. three other people. That means, oh, Dana's going to play his combo now. Joey or myself or our guest on twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. there's three other people that have an opportunity to do something to throw you off your combo. With Pioneer, there aren't that many ways to interact, especially game one. If you're playing a certain deck, you may not have any way to interact with an Underworld Breach, and you just lose as soon as they cast it. So the fact that there are three opponents means that there's more chances to interact with a lot of these combos too, which is why, outside of Walking Ballista, none of these see a ton of play in Commander.
Right. All right, Matt, you just plugged our stream again, which kind of reminds me of a challenge, the stats that I've got planned for this episode. So how about we take a break from talking about those cards that were banned in other formats and we get to challenging some stats. It's one of our favorite segments here on the show where we take a critical look at the data on EDHREC because, you know, there's a whole ton of it, but we don't always agree with it. Sometimes I think the cards are seeing too much play. Sometimes I think the cards are seeing too little play. And that's one of those challenges that I've got here. You're going to have to bear with me because it's a really interesting one. And it happened on our stream, twitch.tv/EDHRecCast, and we had special guest Aaron Radney, awesome fantasy illustrator, on the show. He was playing his Marin of Clan Nel'Toth deck, and he played a card that kind of blew my mind. And I'm a dedicated Marin player, so I mean, you guys know it's pretty difficult to get Joey to budge on one of his precious decks, right? Like, it's weird when Joey... I added this card to my deck, and it's weird when that happens. Like,
just tell us the card, Joey. Just tell us the
okay.
card.
Okay, so Aaron played against me the card Mitotic Slime. This is a 5-mana 4/4 ooze, and when it dies, you get two 2/2 green oozes that say when they die, they make 1/1 oozes. So it is basically 7 bodies on a single card. On its face, that probably doesn't sound too impressive, except that Marin is just so famous at being an aristocrat that if you pair this with, say, a Zulaport Cutthroat effect, for example, this can be 7 death triggers all on one card. That's the same reason that I play Avenger of Zendikar in my Marin deck. Like, I've played cards like Deep Forest Hermit in my Marin deck to try and get as many bodies as possible to get a bunch of those Zulaport death, you know, life-drainy triggers. Mitotic Slime, Aaron was keen to point out, only shows up in 57 of the over 3,000 Marin decks. And when I saw the way that he used it in that game to just Blood Artist us to bits, I was very, very impressed. So Aaron, this one's for you. Kudos on the Mitotic Slime. You have made a soulless, heartless necromancer like myself budge and actually put a card into one of my most long-standing decks. If you can get me to change a card in my deck, that I feel like is very, very impressive. So kudos to you. This card is really cool. And I just kind of can't stop gushing about it because I can't wait to drain your guys' life with all of the bodies that this card produces.
Well, thank you, Aaron, for ruining so many future games with Joey on twitch.tv/EDHRecCast.
All right. I'm done with mine. Let's move on. Dana, how about you? What's your challenge this episode?
So despite this being an uncommon from Brigadian Masks, this was not my suggestion. This was brought to us.
Why don't I believe you?
This was brought to us by Sean, a Patreon supporter in our Discord channel just for challenge stat suggestions, and the card is Rishadin Footpad. So it's 3 and a blue for a human pirate. When Rishadin Footpad comes into play, each opponent sacrifices a permanent unless they pay 2 mana. It's currently only in 512 decks, and in particular, it's only in 5% of Admiral Beckett Brass decks. Up until Commander Legends, we had a pretty limited amount of decent pirates out there, although we've got quite a few more now in this set. But forcing people to pay 2 or lose something is a pretty decent ask. People generally aren't leaving 2 mana free. And if they have left 2 mana free, it's usually for a reason. And forcing them to spend it is still kind of a win. So in a situation where you have a limited amount of pirates to run and you have a card that is always going to generate some sort of value, Plus, it's ran in a deck that tends to run blink effects oftentimes, even if it's just to abuse Dockside Extortionist, which is also a pirate. There's just a little bit of added utility there as well. I think it's a pretty good card, and it should be in more than 5% of Beckett Brass decks for sure.
That's a really interesting one. I still am not entirely positive if that wasn't a random hipster card that you picked out personally. You just pretending that it was a Patreon submission.
It's my fake Patreon name I use.
That does sound like something Dana would do.
It's an obscure enough card that it seems right up your alley, Dana. All right, Matt, let's move it to you. What is your challenge?
So my challenge is kind of for an upcoming commander, but also looking back, there's a lot of Toughness Matters decks on edhrec.com. If you go to the themes tab, you'll see all sorts of different themes just for whatever you might happen to be wanting to do. And Toughness Matters is a theme that people build a lot of. You have Doran the Siege Tower. You have all sorts of different Toughness Matters types of commanders out there. And one card that isn't showing up on the page at all is Orin Frostfang. This is one of my favorite cards. I'm going to tell people to play it. It is 3GG for a 2/6 snow creature, which is a snake. Attacking creatures you control have death touch. And whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card. This card is, it's so good. I play it in my Miri Weatherlight Duelist deck, and that doesn't even care about Toughness Matters, but when you look at all these different things that it's doing, it makes it very hard for your creatures to be blocked because they all have death touch, so even your one power creature, it's going to kill whatever it's, you know, is blocking it. But also, people don't want to block it, so they don't, but then you just draw a card for it. It makes combat so hard to navigate for your opponents. But also with, you know, the new Toughness Matters commander coming out in Commander Legends, you have Kol'Fanor the Last U. It's going to love this. It's a 2/6, so it has a big, big toughness score. It's not showing up on Toughness Matters page at all. And I think that is wrong. So if you're looking for a solid card to add, you should definitely give Orin Frostfang a go. The best it's doing, actually, is 34% of Doran the Siege Tower decks, which is a fine number, but nowhere else for no other commander. And I think that is wrong. So if you need a good solid five drop, it's got a big butt, it's got that 6 toughness, it's going to make your creatures very hard to block, and also you're going to draw cards. What is not there to love? It's so good. Orin Frostfang, folks, if you have a Toughness Matters deck, just find a spot.
I think that this might be one of our most classic Challenge the Stats segments ever, actually, because I'm talking about a card that gives you a lot of death triggers. Matt is talking about attacking stuff. And then Dana found a card from what set was it again? I don't know. It was in 1974 or whatever. So, like, this is just, it's very quintessentially EDH Recast Challenge.
It was from the original Dungeons & Dragons handbook.
Right. Right. Dana's Challenge the Stats bit come from 1849. All right. So, anyway, with that done, let's move back into our main topic. We've got a couple of other formats that we want to take a look at. Matt, take us through Modern. What cards are banned in Modern that have some popularity here in Commander?
So the first is going to be a little group of artifacts that we see. They're all pretty powerful. They do some very neat things, and they carry over pretty well into Commander. We're going to talk about Sensei's Divining Top. We're going to talk about Skull Clamp and Chrome Mox. Now, Sensei's Divining Top is probably one of the most annoying cards if you're me to play against because people activate it 13 times per turn. But you get to look at the top three cards of your library. You get to kind of navigate what is coming up and do some top deck manipulation. Skull Clamp just is amazing. It's an equipment, but also gives whatever creature is equipped to it +1/-1, and that makes it pretty bad. But then, you draw two cards whenever the equipped creature dies.
That card's crazy.
That's just, it's so crazy. I think that's one card that all three of us play in more than one deck. But Chrome Mox is just a fast mana piece that it's not that hard to really get rid of cards to make Chrome Mox work that well. And it's just a very, very powerful mana rock.
Yeah, of the three, Skullclamp is definitely seeing the most play in 67,000 decks. So that's really intense. And that's great no matter whether you're playing like really aggressive deck because you're attacking a whole lot so your creature's dying, or you're playing an Aristocrat's Shell like I always tend to do. You're just going to draw cards and recoup any losses. It is strangely one of those equipment that would actually be worse if it gave more toughness to the creature that it was attached to, which is just insane. The other ones do feel like maybe they're a bit more specialized. I remember a time a while ago when I was like, oh, Sensei's Divining Top, I would probably put that in every deck if I could, but now I'm not sure that I actually feel feel that way. I'm not sure that it goes into every single deck because the density of draw effects that we have nowadays in Commander can be so great that you'll just see more cards if you play more draw spells and enough of the good ones that the, you know, subtle fine-tuned top deck manipulations can kind of just be ousted by you drawing 10 cards or something like that. So it does feel a little bit more specialized nowadays, at least in my experience.
You know, one thing we should point out too here, it's become much more apparent here in the modern list, but it's been a trend. When we go back to look at the band in standard list, we're looking at cards that show up in 1%, 1%, 2% of EDH decks. When we get up through Historic and Pioneer, we're looking at like, you know, 4, 4, 8, 5, those kind of numbers. Now we're looking at like, you know, 16%, 10%, 20% for some of these cards. So as we've gotten to older and older formats, the representation in EDH for these cards has gone up and up. And that trend will continue as we continue to dig into even older formats than modern.
Yeah, and I think that just speaks to the power level of some of these cards too, is, you know, Sensei's Divining Top, it's a very, very powerful card. You get so much card selection out of it. And Skullclamp, there's just very little this card doesn't do. And then Chromox, it's just, it's a zero mana rock. You can just, you know, imprint a card from your hand onto it and you have an extra mana. And it's, if you're playing in some high power decks, that's a great addition, you know, if you're trying to power out your commander on turn one.
Yeah, I would guess you also get some weird price and ubiquity things as well. Like if you wanted to add Euro to your deck and it was a $45 card in standard, it's probably pretty easy to say, I'm just going to wait and see if it drops in price, versus something like Ponder or Preordain or Skullclamp. Those have been around forever. They're pretty easy to find, and they're pretty easy to find relatively cheaply, and the price isn't really going to go anywhere for the most part, other than perhaps up for some of these cards. So I think you probably also are seeing representation in that regard. And I would guess also, you know, people don't always change their commander decks very quickly either. If you only update your deck once a year, well, you've had a lot of chances to update it since Ponder's been out. You maybe haven't had a lot of chances since Uro has been out.
Yeah, no.
Well, and a lot of these cards too, they've been in precons.
Sure.
Skullclamp has been in precons before, so that definitely boosts up the numbers.
Yeah, good point.
And a couple cards you're going to talk about here in a second, they've all been in precons. So
exactly.
The numbers there are a little bit higher, but also that doesn't take away from their power level at all.
Right. And yeah, so Dana, the ones that you just mentioned, Ponder and Preordain, also cards that are banned in Modern. And in fact, we'll throw one more on here, Treasure Cruise, the Delve spell that lets you draw 3 cards if you get rid of a bunch of stuff in your graveyard, which initially, to someone like me, ooh, getting rid of stuff in my graveyard, why would I ever do that? That's the worst thing ever. But to draw 3 cards, actually, I'm kind of tempted. So yeah, those, like you mentioned, a lot of popularity, not a huge price tag, and I'm sure that there's some of your personal favorites too, because I know how much you love doing those cantrippy draws.
I absolutely do. But in these formats, they are kind of functionally the same thing as Once Upon a Time in Escape of the Wild, where there are tools being used to dig down and find some specific piece you want, which is just way less powerful in our format than it is in these formats.
Yeah, very much. Okay, so with those out of the way then, Matt, there are two more here that I'm seeing that are banned in Modern that I feel like you've got quite a bit of experience with, no?
I've cast both these many, many times, probably more times than I could or should be able to count. So these cards are Deathrite Shaman and Green Sun Zenith. Deathrite Shaman is probably the best one mana planeswalker ever printed, I would go so far as to say. It does pretty much everything. You can exile different cards out of people's graveyards and get any given effect, whether it's, you know, exile a land and you basically turn into a mana dork, or you get rid of an instant or sorcery and you have an opponent lose 2 life, or excuse me, each opponent loses 2 life, or you can exile a creature card, get rid of Joey's, you know, Conrad or anything super powerful in Joey's graveyard that's inevitably going to be there, and you gain 2 life. It's a great cost. But Green Sun Zenith also is banned in Modern. It's X and a green, and you can just search your library for a green creature that costs X or less, put on the battlefield, and then you actually shuffle Green Sun Zenith back into your library. Deathrite Shaman is played in 19% of, you know, Golgari-based decks. Green Sun Zenith is played in 11%. There's significant numbers. Both of them are played in over 20,000 decks, and that's pretty significant numbers.
Very, very significant. I have played Green Sun Zenith quite a bit in Commander. Here's a weird confession that I don't think anyone has seen coming. I've never played Deathrite Shaman in Commander. Not saying it's bad, it's just that That's how attached I am to the cards in my graveyard, you guys.
Well, I think Shaman is similar a little bit to Divining Top in that you're probably never wrong to put it in a deck that can support it. But I think also it probably gets a little bit, maybe even annoying is the right word. Like, it's just so fiddly and responsible for like little incremental advantages that I think after a while, people just want to run something splashy and fun versus something that's so like tightening up the nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
And well, in Deathrite Shaman kind of relies on what else is going on at the pod. Yeah. If you're playing in a low powered play group, Deathrite Shaman isn't going to be a mana dork very often because they're probably not playing very many fetch sure. lands. If they are, it's, you know, they'll play, you know, Evolving Wilds and Terraformorphic Expanse, but that's not very reliable either. And people don't like putting caps on how powerful a card is. So in Commander, Deathrite Shaman, it's fine in higher powered play groups, but in lower, I don't think it carries over near as well. And just it scales along with the power. But Green Sun Zenith, you're playing green creatures, you probably want to give it a look.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, certainly play within your budget, because I think that that's one that kind of swings a bit in price sometimes. But yeah, like these cards, no card ever exists on its power level in isolation. Power level depends upon context, and Deathrite Shaman is a very good example of that. All right, so we just looked through Modern. Let's go farther back in time and see how that affects the numbers. Dana, tell us about some cards that are banned in Legacy and how popular they are here in Commander.
So, you know, looking at the Legacy ban list here, these really group up very, very nicely. Mm-hmm. Looking at a cluster of the best mana rocks ever printed and a cluster of the best tutors ever printed, essentially. Yeah. So, you know, let's start talking about the tutors here. We've got Demonic Tutor and Vampiric Tutor, the two probably best tutors ever, definitely the two best black tutors ever, in 30% of Commander decks and 17% Demonic and Vampiric respectively, and Mystical Tutor in 24% of the blue decks that can run it. And I would guess those numbers are probably only that low, and I'd say that kind of sarcastically, because of the cost of those cards. Demonic Tutor has been $40, if not more, for quite a few years now. Vamp Tutor's been closing in on $100 for a few years now. And Mystical Tutor's, you know, I think over $20 now. So I would wager if those cards were less expensive, the penetration into decks would be higher than it is already, and it's pretty high.
Yeah, and Vampire Tutor finally getting a reprint in Commander Legends, yep. Actually. So we'll see if that affects the numbers, but it might not affect the price all that much because the demand on these things will never be sated.
And this is another good example. We talked about, you know, things like Once Upon a Time, how it's less powerful trying to find one card in 100 than it is trying to find one of four cards in 60. Not that tutors aren't really, really good, but in Commander, where you have access to just one of these tutors, in black, you have access to both of these, but like one of each individual tutor, you just see them less often than you would running a density of four in a 60-card deck. So they're great, but they show up less often than they would in another format.
Right, but they have this inverse relationship to the Once Upon a Time, I would say, because Once Upon a Time, given the increased deck size here in Commander, it's just too swingy. You're really never going to get the benefit the way that you would in a constructed format with 60 cards. Whereas, you know, Demonic Tutor in a 100-card format, you're going to find whatever you need. That is anything.
You can find that specific piece that you don't want to just hope for that you top deck in the next, you know, 92 cards.
Yeah, you will never miss with a Demonic Tutor or a Vampiric Tutor. You might miss with Once Upon a Time. Absolutely. Demonic Tutor is just, like, it's kind of the gold standard, if you will, as far as tutors, and that's why it's so expensive, because it's just the best.
Right, but you don't need them. You don't need to spend this much money on tutors.
You absolutely do not need tutors.
Right. And also, you don't need the fast mana effects that we're seeing either. You can totally play them. If you got them, go for it.
The three rocks I was talking about here are Mana Vault, Mana Crypt, and Soul Ring. You know, Soul Ring, everyone has access to, so I guess the price isn't a factor there. But, you know, Mana Crypt, over $200 for a long period of time. Occasionally, it's dipped down just below $100, but it usually creeps back up to car payment range. And while Mana Vault was, you know, kind of cheap for a few years, it's also gotten prohibitively expensive. So we're looking at rocks that are, they'll just break your bank. They will just keep you from paying your cell phone bill if you have to put them in a deck. And while they're really, really strong, you know, we do have workarounds, and perhaps your pod isn't playing at that speed or that power level. So there's a lot of considerations about whether or not you should be running these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically what we've learned is everything that you try to do in Commander, you cannot do in Legacy. You
right.
can't tutor, you can't play fast mana. And that's just how it goes.
Yeah, I suppose a little bit. But I also, like, I look at some of these mana rocks that, like, the popularity on these, like, Mana Crypt is still showing up in 11% of eligible decks, which is all of the decks because it's, you know, colorless and can go anywhere. And, like, going back, I guess, to the hubbub about Jeweled Lotus, and I'm sure we're going to hear about this in the YouTube comments, but I prefer Mana Crypt to Jeweled Lotus. There, it's, I yes. said it.
Like, yeah, I have cast a Black Lotus. I have used it. I would 100% rather have Mana Crypt. The short burst doesn't compare to just how much mana you're going to get over the course of the game because Mana Crypt is just there. So
now I'm not sure how much of a negative it is to say a card isn't quite as good as Mana Crypt.
Fair enough.
That isn't perhaps the curse you think it is, but I completely agree. Mana Crypt is almost always a better card.
No, it is kind of an illustration of the self-policing effect that mm-hmm. EDH can have. And like you talked about the popcorn earlier at the top of this episode, and it was, as always, extremely funny to watch the EDH community go from, oh my goodness, this is an auto-include, to this needs to be banned, WotC is killing the format, to realizing, oh, well, you know, maybe this is only kind of okay in some of my decks, and it's not actually quite that. Well, I always said that it was dependent upon the commander. It's just like kind of fun to watch that news cycle repeat itself every time that new cards come out.
It was an interesting conversation to have. But let's circle back. We have a couple other cards that get a decent amount of play in Commander that also are banned in Legacy. And those two cards are going to be Strip Mine and Windfall. So Strip Mine, just tap it to blow up any land, any given land. It's pretty powerful in a format full of more Gaia's Cradles if people have those kind of cards laying around. But even if you're just trying to get rid of, you know, a certain land that is their only source of red mana, that's still a powerful effect there. And Windfall, we've seen plenty of Windfall decks. That's played in 16% of blue decks, for crying out loud. Everybody just draws new hands, and it's just a combo card in some people's decks. It's a graveyard filler in other people's decks. It's all over the place.
A few years back, I went to a small card store in the Midwest, in a town that didn't really have any other card stores within probably 100 or so miles of it. So anyone who played Magic in that area went to the same card store, and they had a stack of Strip Mines there. I mean, it was probably 200 cards in the case that was just all Strip Mines, and it was so strange for me to see that many Strip Mines. I asked the guy running the shop, like, do you sell that many Strip Mines? He said, yeah, it's probably our number one selling card. I probably sell 30 to 40 Strip Mines a week because every Commander player puts them in a deck.
Yeah. Well, and now it's been certainly priced out.
Now, right. It was like a $4 card then. So, you know, it was relatively easy to put one in every deck. When it's 25, that's a whole different deal.
Right. Yeah. And here we do have plenty of other workarounds like Ghost Quarter, like mm-hmm. Tectonic Edge. There are plenty of other much more budget friendly versions here in this format. But also, I think that these two cards are a really great representation of like the way that cards scale more powerfully when you have just one opponent. If you have a Strip Mine and a Crucible of Worlds against a single opponent, and let's say you manage to get some other type of additional land effects going on, like an Exploration, you aren't just using this as a utility tool to get rid of their very special lands. You are preventing them from being able to play Magic by just completely taking out their entire mana base. And Windfall, too, is a way that, like, in a one-on-one format, you can play out your entire hand and then refuel, and your opponent will refuel at the same amount, but they'll have actually lost some card economy there. Whereas in Commander, that is completely inverted. Like, you actually run a pretty significant risk when you cast Windfall in Commander of giving your opponents the very tools that they need to destroy you. So you need to really mitigate for that in a special way, such as by, you know, playing a wheel deck that actually punishes them for all of the cards that they've drawn.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with Strip Mine. In a format where you might play two lands an entire game, blowing up half their mana base is pretty important. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah, Windfall is the one I would say I'm surprised to see it showing up here, and might be in too many decks, perhaps. I maybe am a little bit biased against wheels. But it's absolutely, that's a good point, Joey. The card is a completely different card in Commander than it is in Legacy.
Yeah, well, yeah. It doesn't matter how many cards you give them in Legacy if you're storming out and they just die by the time you would have a chance to cast any of those cards. Because, yeah, it's a very, very powerful combo card in Legacy.
Yeah, so take that lesson from the way that it's used in Legacy and apply that to your games here in EDH, and maybe you can mimic that type of power level here in Commander to emulate the reasons why it's banned in that crazy older format. And, man, fellas, that just leaves us with one final format to get to, the vintage format, the oldest of the formats, the OG format, where cards don't get banned. Cards get restricted. The only cards that are usually banned in vintage are the ones that involve, like, the anti thing, or they involve manual dexterity, or there's the card Scheherazade, which is just like, let's play a game within a game. And we're like, we've seen the movie Inception, but please no for this one. Like, you know, there's all of those types of cards. But there actually was a card that got banned in Vintage, like outright banned, which again, just doesn't happen. Matt, tell us all about it. What got banned in Vintage and how's it doing in Commander?
So I feel like I need to drill down on this. Like, this is how monumental of an occasion having a card banned in Vintage is. The last time it wasn't part of a cycle, like the Hidden Agenda cards or the Anti cards or whatever, was Scheherazade. That's how far back you have to go. So when Companion came around in Ikoria, that happened to give us Lurrus of the Dream Den. And this card, the companion mechanic basically was fulfilled automatically. Joey, we were talking earlier and you had a really good comment. Lurrus of the Dream Den was banned in Vintage because the companion clause is automatically fulfilled because each permanent in your starting deck has to have a CMC of two or less, which is kind of similar to why Lutri was banned in Commander, where the clause of every card that wasn't a basic land had to have a different name, was automatically fulfilled in any Izzet deck. It's just ubiquitous everywhere. It's pretty crazy that Lurrus of the Dream Den made the Mentor decks, the Monastery Mentor type of Vintage, kind of play lots of non-creature spells decks. Mentor decks stopped playing Monastery Mentor so they could play Lurrus instead. That's kind of what it did to Vintage. And it's just, it's such a big deal that Black Lotus is legal. Like the actual Lotus and all these like crazy Moxen and the Power Nine and Time Walk and all these spells, those are all restricted, yes, but they're legal. Yeah. Lurrus is not.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Like we were kind of saying before we actually started recording, it's just like Lurrus is to Vintage in a way as Lutri is to Commander, because the conditions just already met by the way that that format naturally plays. Because, yeah, why wouldn't you do this? It's actually not all that difficult. I don't know. It's almost as though starting every game of competitive level Magic with a free extra card outside the game that requires almost no deck restriction for your deck to obtain and which creates homogenized gameplay was not the most balanced mechanic that they ever designed.
How do you really feel, Joey?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's just, that's pretty crazy. How is it doing in EDH though? How's Lurrus's numbers? Is it as big in EDH as it was in Vintage? Or,
well, there's 289 decks around with it, so not
so it's
really
close.
So it's close. There are 289 Vintage decks, also 289 Commander decks playing this. There's more Vintage decks than that. But it's the power just does not carry over. I think when we first saw this card, we compared it, or we said that really the only deck that you can play this in is Aili Tireless Pilgrim decks. That's it.
As a companion.
Companion, yes.
Yeah, and then as its own deck, it's not necessarily doing anything new. Plus, it doesn't have the same color flexibility as it would in the other constructed formats, because the hybrid mana there in other constructed formats can actually be felt and played around with in different types of color decks, whereas in here, it is actually very restrictive, the color identity situation going on there, which maybe they were trying to rely upon for the purposes of... I don't know what was going through their minds when Companion happened. But I don't know. Dana, going back to a point that you made earlier about how, like, the farther back we go, the more insane the numbers get for the banned cards that we're seeing, I think this is like maybe the uncanny valley dip, or like the exception that proves the rule, possibly what's going on here with Vintage. But man, that's just how powerful this particular companion is in Magic's oldest format.
Yeah, I think at this point we've kind of wrapped all the way around and come back to the other side.
There you go. Yeah. So, okay, having looked through all of those cards that were banned in other formats and seeing sort of where that they fall within EDH, it's fun to just sort of explore and take a look at. And it's really cool because I think there's plenty of lessons that we can take from why those cards are powerful in other formats and see whether that power applies here in Commander. But are there any other final parting thoughts that you guys want to leave with this episode talking about all of these banned cards?
So So the big thing that it makes me do is just to look at, and I've mentioned this a few times over the course of the show, it's really made me look at the difference between Commander being a multiplayer format and how having multiple people in a pod affects the cards compared to these other formats. Whether it's something like Teferi, where you're suddenly affecting the spells of all the people and making them focus on you in a way that doesn't happen in a 1v1 format where they're always focused on you, or things like Windfall, where you're, you know, giving three people a chance to draw answers versus a format where you maybe even don't care what the one person draws because you're going to win before it matters. So that's what my big takeaway here is, it's really making me want to look a little bit deeper at maybe other cards even that I'm running and how they impact Commander in ways that are different than they do these older formats.
Yeah, I really like that take.
Well, and one thing that sticks out to me is kind of how power is defined between different formats, between 60-card and 100-card formats. You know, you see all the fast mana that is banned in Legacy, but that's kind of how we get by in a lot of play groups. I know when we play on, you know, stream, we kind of rely on getting ahead on resources before the other people can. But then, you know, we look at cards that are banned in Commander. You have Prophet of Kruphix, which I don't think anybody would ever clamor to have that banned in any of the 60-card formats. The same with Paradox Engine. But then kind of how the power is all relative to what format you're playing, where Prophet of Kruphix was just ubiquitous. Like, you just had to play that if you're playing blue and green. If you're playing Paradox Engine, it was just such a powerful combo engine. Whereas in 60-card formats, they're kind of like, okay, well, you spent all that mana, I'm just going to kill you. Right. So it's just funny how power kind of carries over and translates into different formats. And I would say Modern and Legacy, if you look at those ban lists and the cards that we talked about tonight, that's kind of the sweet spot, if you will, of cards that are powerful in Commander, not bannably powerful. I don't think there was a card that we talked about here that anybody really thinks on just on a power level wise conversation should be banned. I mean, maybe Sol Ring, but it's also a $2 card, so everybody can have it. But it's funny just seeing how that power translates when you cross formats like this.
Well, and I think also, like, looking at these banned lists, you know, for other formats, like, I see Windfall, for example, which I think was banned in Legacy, if I'm remembering correctly. And I'm just like, what? To my Commander brain, I'm just like, I'm sorry, what? Like, that doesn't quite...
That's a precon card, yeah.
Right, and I'm just like, that's like, feels like a classic Commander card, and it's seeing a whole bunch of play here. But, like, those formats would also look at our Commander ban list and be like, I'm sorry, what's going on? The Paradox Engine? Wait, Iona? Really?
They would see Sway of the Stars and giggle at us, yeah.
Right. They're just like, Worldfire. I don't even know what that one does. Why'd you ban it? Like, but here, like, it's a completely different effect. We've got different reasons for banning things. And that's just something that I think is always useful to keep in mind, is like, why are these cards banned? Because they are totally different, you know, reasons across all of these formats. And sort of comparing notes to them isn't always going to help, because there's no equivocation there. There are very different motivations for each of them. And I guess, too, you know, sort of going back to the inspiration behind, you know, why we wanted to do this particular episode, or at least why we thought of doing it, looking at banned cards, after all of the discourse and hubbub that happened around Jeweled Lotus. Look, I know that conversation's 2 weeks old for everyone who's listening to this episode, but it was hilarious, and it was big in our minds when we were seeing it. But it's just like, let's at least play with the cards first before we start throwing around a lot of talks about, like, you know, ban hammer on this, ban hammer on that. Because looking at a lot of these ban lists, it takes, like, Matt, I wouldn't have understood half of the, you know, cards that are banned here without your assistance, so thank you for that. But, like, the cards and the reasons that they get banned can be very multiplicitous, if that's a word, and, like, it requires a whole lot of information behind each one of them. And that's just, you know, the type of care and attention that we really ought to put into the conversations that we have about the game. And that is my soapbox. I think that's a good enough monologue for us to close the show on, now that I've talked your guys' ear off. So in any case, let's call this episode to a close. Fellas, thanks so much for joining me. And if any of our listeners would like to get in touch with us, where is it that they can find us all? Matt?
So you can find me on Twitter's at Mathimus55. That's MathImus55. You can also find us Wednesday evenings, like Dana said. We're streaming with some pretty ridiculously great guests every week, Wednesday evening. Check your local listings, because time zones don't work around here.
Wow. And Dana.
You can find me on the Twitter birds at Dana Roach. You can hear me on my other podcast, CMDR Central. And you can find all of us at patreon.com/EDHRedcast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter, and you can find the cast at EDH Retcast on both Facebook and on Twitter. And if you have a question, you can contact us at edhretcast@gmail.com. Our thanks again to Josh Likwai and the whole team at The Command Zone for handling the post-production work on our podcast, and our thanks to our sponsors, that's TCG Player and CardKingdom.com. You can find them using the price info links on EDH Rec or by visiting CardKingdom.com/EDHREC to show your support for the show. We'll be back at you next week with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.